This is recovery. Is recovery regardless of your sexual identity. My name's David and I'm an addict. I want to share just a little bit. I got clean August the 20th of 1986. I came out in Narcotics Anonymous that I was a gay man. It was not as accepting as it is today. I was sexually abused when I was 9 years old. I was raped by my cousin. And also I'm an incest survivor of my two brothers. People's always got stories. But you know, the readings in the Narcotics Anonymous book, it says, some people are unconstitutionally incapable of being honest with oneself. That was the one I struggled with really bad, because my whole life I lied. I told everybody that I just love women. And I lied. I said I had sex with all these women. I had never had sex with none of them. And then when I got clean, my psychologist said that I need to figure out what side of the street I played on. And I met this lovely lady that I got pregnant. She got an abortion and relapsed. And I was there every few days thinking, well, that would be my child if it was that age. That would be my child if it was that age. That was hard. Have never slept with another woman since. Learn my lesson. But I do have a story to tell. And I'm grateful for Narcotics Anonymous, because Narcotics Anonymous has saved my life. Y'all, I sold dope. I sold lots of dope. And today I don't. And I don't lie, steal, or cheat. I try to be as honest as humanly possible. But it takes that first time telling the truth instead of telling a lie. And when I lie today, I go back and I said, I lied to you. I don't know why I lied. It was just, I guess, instantly I lied. But I have to go and clean it up, because it just eats my lunch now. So, further ado, this gentleman that I've got is from New Orleans. Lovely town. Mardi Gras is awesome. I'll never forget that night I seen him up there. And I'll never forget what they do for beads, I swear to God. I went and bought me some big old pearls. I wanted to see what they'd do. Further ado, here's Paul.
I love you. Hi, everyone. I'm Paul. I'm an addict. I'm doing the gay meeting, just in case y'all didn't know. That's how it started in NA. We'll get the gay guy to do that meeting. Recovery is recovery regardless of sexual identity. And it is. That's how it has been for me in Narcotics Anonymous. I walked into my first meeting in NA. It's not my clean date. My first meeting, February 24th, 1988. I was 27 years old. And it was remarkable. I don't remember much of what was said. People hugged me. Men came up and hugged me and told me to keep coming back, and that hadn't happened in a long time, and I was embraced, and still it wasn't enough. And by the way, I'm the G in LGBTQ, all right, and I know there's not all LGBTQ people here. There's a lot of allies sitting in this room, and I thank you for that. But I knew that when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, this wasn't going to be where I needed to be, because you all didn't allow gay meetings to happen in 1988. It was not thought of as okay to separate. And so I went to a first couple of meetings at a NA clubhouse, and I decided that I was going to go to AA because they had a clubhouse in the French Quarter, the Lambda Center, and they had all gay meetings. And I want to get clean and find a husband, so I'm going to go there. And so I went to the Wednesday night men's meeting at our place, and decided to tell them that I was gay, duh, and that I was going to go to AA. And every single one of those men after that meeting, with big tattoos and Harley's the best, fuck the rest t-shirts, came up to me after that meeting and put their arms around me and said, you don't have to go any other place to find recovery. This is where you belong. And I didn't go. I stayed here. I relapsed after 3.5 years of being clean, not because I was gay, but because my parents got divorced after 31 years of marriage. And that was a big turmoil. But what had happened before that event, and we were talking about this the other day, that there is, that recovery is not fragile. It is solid. You do not relapse by sitting in the convention, being in this meeting. Nobody is running out of here and getting high. Unless there have been slow and methodical steps to leave here. First one, sponsor is stupid. Fuck him. I'm not calling that asshole anymore. Two, sponsees, they keep calling and calling and saying the same shit over and over, and I tell them what to do, and they don't do anything. You're fired. I know I don't pay you, but you're fired. Those meetings. You know who you are. Those meetings. How they do it. And the we of the program becomes the them of the program. And they. And then an ex gets out of prison and we're having lunch. And my parents are divorcing. And we end up at the coke dealer's house. You know, the coke dealer, that one with the big dick. Oh yeah, I remember him. And then all of a sudden, I'm right back where I belong. And let me tell you, if you are in that place, you can turn around at any moment. It is not inevitable. If you are frustrated with your sponsor, have a conversation. If your sponsees are pissing them off, take them to a convention and talk to them. If the they of the program and the they of the meetings is aggravating you, find a different meeting or get some acceptance of where you're at. Because you can stop that train at any moment before you pick up. But here's the problem. I thought I'd get high over at Scott's house. And then I thought I would just come back to the meeting at some point. And it was 4 years. Not four solid years. It was 30 days, back out. 90 days, back out. A year, step back out, boom, in, out, in, out. And the noise in my head was so loud that I couldn't hear the message of hope and faith. I was just in the history meeting. Hope and faith. Because that's what this is, hope and faith. I hope something can help me, and I have faith that you will give it to me. Right? Finally made it back in 1995, January 6, 1995. I have 27 years clean in Narcotics Anonymous, and I'm so grateful that you were still here. By the way, you all were still doing the same shit you were doing when I relapsed. You still were sleeping with each other. You were still aggravating as fuck. you know how you are. Nobody had stopped doing all the shit, but I had the gift of desperation again. And it was this way or no way. And that's the truth. It's for me, it's this way or no way. And the good news is I had a desire to stop using again. So just a little about my homosexuality is that I was raised by two very liberal, kind of pre-hippies. They weren't hippies. My parents, my mother's from England. My father's a coonass. So I had issues. I didn't really kind of fit in anywhere, plus the gay thing, you know. Oh, here's the other thing. I was like huge. I was like size 44 waist, huge. And kids on the playground would call me a fat faggot. I hadn't even had sex yet. And when somebody knows something about you before you do, that's rather disconcerting. Because then you start to monitor. Tighten up this. Don't do a lot of this. Don't keep everything in line. Spread the legs a little bit. Don't cross your legs. Don't do this. Don't wear that. Don't say this. Don't have a lisp. Hello, hello, hello. I'm Paul, I'm an addict. Yeah. Yeah. Do a lot of grabbing down here. But this is the thing, is that constant self-monitoring, that constant fear that you'll be discovered, creates this dishonesty that you're talking about. You live in the lie. Here's the other thing that happens, and it's still with me today, and I still, you then start to rebel against somebody who may give you away. And the internalized homophobia that we naturally have, and the internalized racism that we internally have by living in this society, starts to make me have this kind of, he looks a little too fucking gay. I'm going to have to not hang out with him because they might discover. And so the people who are mostly persecuting gay people have something to hide. And that became me. And that's what I have to still monitor today. And I'm way more open. Listen, I'll talk about anything. I got that from my mother, God rest her soul. I get that. But there is that something inside of me that when that new member walks in the room, I go, oh. Tighten up, Mary. You know. I don't know if it's embarrassment. I don't know if it's fear. I don't know what it is, but that newcomer deserves my love just as much as the cute straight boy who walked in. And my sponsor used to say to me, would you go to all that work with that newcomer if it was a 300-pound black woman? That's what we do in here. We check our motives. We found out what we're really doing here. And that's what I learned in here. So my parents were wonderful. Crazy, but wonderful. My mother worked for a gay man in Atlanta, Georgia. We had a gay, we had lesbian neighbors that we went to Florida with for summer vacation. I was surrounded by positive messages of being gay. And when my parents, they asked me when I was 14 and I denied it, but when they asked me when I was 16 if I was gay, I came out to them and my nose started to spontaneously bleed because of the release of pressure. So even if you come from a wonderful, fantastic, affirming, loving home, just in this world that we live in, saying I am gay is a political statement beyond what I have ever known. It is risky. It is dangerous. I remember when I went to my first gay bar in 1976, the police stopped us as we were going in because they were looking for somebody who was stabbing gay people. They suspected it was a gay person. We don't think that was true. But that's what we were faced with in the time. And walking down the streets, even of the French Quarter, was a political statement, walking hand in hand with another man. I got clean the first time in 1988. And in 1989, I found out I was HIV positive. Not really the way to find out. I found out over the phone, July 3rd. And I was working on a party, an NA party for July 4th at a friend's house. We were doing red and white and blue decorations. You know, get the queen, we'll get it decorated, it'll be fabulous. And there was about six or seven people in the other room when I took the call and found out I was HIV positive. And this is 1989, a different time. And there was that moment to go, do I walk into the room and tell the truth? And I had about a year clean at the time. And I knew somewhere you had taught me that if I don't walk into that room at that moment and tell the truth, I'd be lost. And I walked in the room and I just said, that was the doctor, I'm HIV positive. And those people didn't say anything. All they did was they just moved in and they just surrounded physically. You know, and people say, I don't like to do I don't want to go to funerals. I don't want to do this. I don't know what to say. Nobody gives a shit about what you say. All they care about is that you were there, that you were present. And those people just moved in and surrounded me, and we just sank to the floor, and I cried because it seemed like it was the end of the world. It was a death sentence at that time. And I cannot impress upon you people who are younger than this what that time was like. I just want you to take a moment and just look to your right and your left and just look at the people around you. Just take a look at the people that you love in this room and that are around you. And one by one, they die. One by one, they're gone. And every week, you check the newspaper to find out which funeral you're going to go to this week for somebody sitting in this room. And we didn't know. We didn't know what was doing it. We didn't know what was causing it. It was so weird. It was like, that's why I'm like, pandemic, shmamic, you don't know shit. Fuck you and your pandemic. Right. Triple vaccinated though, fuck y'all. I'm not scared of Big Pharma. I told Carl that. I'm not scared of Big Pharma. Big Pharma saved my fucking life. I started taking AZT in 1989 It was the only thing we had. It was killing people too. Take it. Was able to, look, here's the other thing. Ran up all my credit cards. You're gonna die in a year. Run up your credit cards, bitch, let's go. Charge it. I'm maxing the shit out of these motherfuckers. We going, let's go. We're going to New York, we're going shopping, we're doing this. We're gonna have fun, it's gonna be great. Then you don't die. Fuck. Payment plan. Be careful. Be careful what you pray for. That's all right. 760 credit score. God is good all the time. So I was able to stay. Oh, look, and there was all kinds of things with that. My sponsor said, you know, you're starting to date that guy. You know you have to tell him. Because in my head, I'm still an unattractive person. Can't. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how much weight you lose, how much stuff you do, how much spackle and smoke and mirrors and lights and all of that. You're still in that core. Ugly, ugly, ugly. Ugly, ugly, ugly. Unlovable. Unworthy. All of those things. And now, diseased. And that, you all walked me through that process to say for the first time to somebody who I had invested, hey, I got the results, I'm HIV positive. We made it through it, it was good. I left him for a whole bunch of other reasons. But you walked me through that to tell the truth. To tell the truth, to tell the truth, to tell the truth. Because when I lie about something, it affirms in me the lie. You aren't lovable. You aren't worthy. You aren't attractive. You're not able to find love. If I lie, I have affirmed it. So here's the deal. It doesn't matter what sex you have in here. The principle before the personality is this. The thing that you are hiding, the thing that you are hiding in this moment, not back then, the thing that you are hiding in this moment is the thing that you got high over. And unless you find some body or some place to tell the truth about it, you will continue to get high. So I'm telling you, if you're new in this program and you think, I got all of this stuff and I'm telling everybody this stuff, right here, I got 98% of it. I got it. You love me. You love me. You love me of this 90 because it's all pretty. I'm going to tell you all the pretty stuff. Pretty, pretty things. And then there's this 2%. Ooh, that's that nasty shit. That's what I did when I got high. And I still do it sometimes because I really like it. And I'm not telling you none of that shit. Because you, here's the thing. Because here's what I think. Here's what I think. That 2%, if I tell it to you, you won't love me. Uh-oh. Guess what? Completely opposite is true. Completely opposite. I don't love you because of this 98% pretty shit. And you know it's true. Everyone knows it's true because you sit in a meeting and you hear all the pretty shit sometimes in the meeting. Pretty, 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 pretty. And you're making a list. I got to go to Walmart. I'm going to get this. I'm going to get that. And then I got to call that bitch back because she's been blowing up my phone. Da, 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 da. And then all of a sudden somebody goes, bleh. And the ugly shit comes out. And all of a sudden, your head is clear. and you are present and you are listening and you're not making a list and you're not worrying about who you have to call. You are connected to that person because you know, God, somebody took the risk to tell the shit. And you love them for it. So this meeting isn't an LGBTQ meeting because recovery is recovery. And I don't give a shit who you have sex with. You've been doing that since I relapsed. You all keep fucking each other. It doesn't matter who's having sex with who. What it matters is that somebody has to be willing to stand at some meeting and tell the truth about what the thing is that thinks they disqualifies them from love. Yeah. So that we all can say, I love you because of that stuff. Yeah. So, where are we at? Oh, good. All right, so here's what's going to happen. They're recording this. They don't want any dead time. They want lots of time. They want lots of movement. I work it. Look, oh, this is my free advertisement. Anonymous podcast. If you haven't listened to it, come listen to it. If you want to be a guest on it, come and call me, and I'd love to have you on. We do a basic text study. We do a living clean study. We're doing a guiding principle study. And there's a just for today for each of the 365 days of the year. So that's my free advertisement. Douglas L. in North Carolina will be very pleased. I'll buy this tape so that he can hear that I plug the podcast. So here's the thing. I'm the G. You can be an L. You can be a B, you can be a T, or as my friend likes to say, the alphabet mafia, you can be a Q, you can be a X, you can be a plus, or you can be an A for ally. But I need you to come up here fast and say something, because I don't want no fucking dead time up here, and I don't want these people cutting shit off, okay? So look, I got somebody with fabulous hair, since I have none. I love you all very much. Thank you. Get up here.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Go. Oh, my God, I got to talk really fast. Okay, just kidding. Hi, I'm Star, and I am an addict.
Hi, Star.
So I am the Q and kind of a T. Whoa. And I came to this workshop because in my home group, well, first of all, let me just say, I have known all my life that I wasn't good at being a girl, and you know, I didn't want to do girl things or whatever. But I didn't know there was a word for that. I knew I wasn't a man trapped in a woman's body, for lack of a better word, but I didn't know there was a word for what I was experiencing until I found it about 6 or 7 years ago, playing Cards Against Humanity, for crying out loud. yeah, I pulled an answer card that said, and I'll never forget it because, you know, it gave me my word, a pan-gendered octopus searching the universe for love. I was like, that's me. So, but I stayed quiet about it in the rooms. Like, I had a certain community where it was more okay to be open and experiment and explore who I am. But in the rooms, I have stayed quiet about it the entire time until recently. And I was in a home group business meeting, and another non-binary person was in there. And they were talking about the men's list and the women's list. And they said, which list do I go on? And all this time, I've been on the women's list because I'm not saying a fucking thing, right? I'm not sharing anything about this. But it was then that I realized that I cannot afford to be quiet anymore. It's not just about me, and it's not just about me being comfortable. It's about the next addict that walks in the room and is able to find identification and feel like they belong, you know, feel like they can find recovery in this room. And I thought about going to AA. I thought about it because they have recently changed their wording to a fellowship of people. And so, you know, I'm going through all this stuff with my home group, and I'm like, fuck it and run. That's what I do, right? So I just want to run away. I just want to say, forget this home group, forget this fellowship. I'm just going to go to this other fellowship, and it'll be so much easier. But I'm not. I'm standing in there. I'm sticking in there. And thank God I have a couple of people in my home group who are not just allies, but they're accomplices. And they're rolling up their sleeves, and they're putting themselves at risk in order to fight the good fight, so to speak. And so my home group business meeting guidelines review is coming up next weekend. And, you know, the phone list is one of the things we're going to talk about. You know, I said I have to take my name off the women's list. Like, I can't be in integrity and have my name on the women's list. And the GSR said, fuck that. Put your name on both. So I put my name on both, and somebody pulled the men's list and got rid of it. Because it sent the message to newcomers. Why do we think so little of our newcomers? That if there is, and these are their words, if there is a woman's name on the men's list, then that means they can go pick up the women's list and call anybody they want inappropriately. You know, no, recovery is recovery. Nowhere in our literature does it say men stick with the women, women stick with the women, men stick with the men. You know, only in the sponsorship IP does it even broach the topic. And then it says the most important thing is to find somebody you're not sexually attracted to so that you can have the process of recovery without that interfering. So I'm standing up today here, scared to death of my home group business meeting, queer and proud. Thanks.
I'm Wynn. I'm an addict. I found recovery in that other fellowship, but I continue to seek recovery in NA. I found friends in NA that are just like me. I always say in that other fellowship, I'm an alcoholic whose disease progressed to a needle in my arm. It's so much easier to come in here and say I'm an addict, right? So you told so much of my story, I don't really need to tell it too much, but I'm struggling today, and so I'm going to share that. I was at a meeting last night. I'm in Florence, Alabama, and like you were saying, it is a lonely thing to be honest and open in a meeting sometimes. And I got some more bullshit last night from some people, and it's that underlying thing where they don't realize that they're just disrespecting you. And the best story I can tell is like when my sponsor, he's my best friend today. He has gay children. He's a biker, and was not accepting of his kids. And somehow God put us together, and he's great. But when we first met, he and his brother-in-law, they're both younger than me, and they would get in the truck, and anybody else that got in the truck that was older than them, a male, they would, like, let them sit in the front, but never me. So I tried to explain it to him, like, you don't realize that you're doing it, but somehow you think I'm less than you. Well, I'm more of a man than half those men sitting in the rooms back there. But last night, I told him I didn't want to hear that I'm the problem. You know, I know I'm the problem. I know how I react. I know that now. I've learned it in the rooms. But last night I didn't want to hear it. All I could do last night was just not use. You know what I mean? It's the best I could do was just not use. I didn't know this meeting was happening today. My friend Amanda, she's done a lot to put this thing together. I knew she was here. I knew my friends were here from NA. I said, hey, I'm going to ride down to Decatur today. And I decided that at 10:30. And I made it in time for 11:30 for this. Cannot tell you that was God, because I needed this today, and I needed that. So I'm going to end with this really fast, and that is that one of my greatest like things that's in my head right now is I'm coming up on 50 years old, July 3rd, and I'm 30 years positive. And I found out in L.A., I'm a film producer, and I found out on the first film I was a production assistant on with Michelle Pfeiffer and Robert Redford. Some of you old people know that film. And I found out with a pager. I got a page, and I stopped, and I called with my quarters that they give you at the office, and I called the doctor, and they asked me to come in. Our reasons for our causes and conditions are different sometimes. Our problem is the same. But what got us here is we have a lot more to work on, I think. 80% of LGBT will abuse alcohol or drugs at some point in their lifetime. Whether they're an addict or an alcoholic is up to the individual. But there's research shows 80%. Over 46% of homeless youth in this country identify as LGBT. We're throwaways and runaways. Don't let them throw you out of a meeting. Don't walk out of a meeting either. I need you there in Florence if you're around. Come to a meeting.
Thank you.
I'm here now, my attic. Hey. Oh, my God. I'm so grateful for the Rooms of Narcotics and I love you, Paul. Oh, my God. I can remember when I started crying when Paul said somebody, it stuck in my head. I remember when I first came to this first convention up here. God, I got clean February the 11th in 1989. And I can remember when I came to the first meeting, that guy right there was at registration, David. And I can remember he said, hey, sister. And I'm like, what the fuck? And I said, I am not your motherfucking sister. That's what I said. And oh my God, today, oh my God, that was what? I have 33 years clean on the 11th of this month. Oh my God. And we've been talking every day for the last 25 years or more. Oh my God, I mean, you know, I love him so much. Oh God. Because I was so scared when I came here. He helped me from the beginning. It took years to get where I'm at today, but I'm okay with me today. Everybody know that my name is Henry. Even everywhere I go, I'm a gay man. And some of them, you know, like the men, I can remember years ago I worked on something, this man want to arm wrestle me, I arm wrestle his ass. And you know what happened. Boop! I took his ass down, you know. But, oh, my God, I thank God for the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. Oh, man. And like Paul was saying, you know, all the stuff I was saying, the credit card things, all that stuff, I did the same thing. Shit, I did that two times in recovery. Today, God, Lord Jesus, I got a credit card with a $20,000 limit on it. But just because I got that shit, that don't mean I have to use it. You know, I don't learn. I mean, all that. All, yeah. But all of that, oh my God. Well, all of that, you know, I owe everything to God and to the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, you know, to the God of my understanding, which I found in the rooms here, you know, because he was loving, caring, and kind. And I know God loved me. I mean, I know I'm not confused today. And I know y'all love me. I know that, you know, today, you know. And I accept the MF that don't love me. You know, I'm okay with all that, you know, and I'm so grateful to the program of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm so grateful to this area. Because if I had came here years ago, God and me, which is what I do all these years I've been coming here, I've been coming by myself. Well, I've been coming with God and me for the last 20-some years. You know, and it's so awesome that the relationship I've built with a lot of people in this room and also outside the rooms, because the people that in my job and about all the people in my life, they love me for me because God and this program have given me the ability to be real. I am real today. I don't have no secrets. I can tell you straight up what's going on in my life, you know, and I'm not ashamed of anything that I do in my life. And I'm grateful that I owe up to this program. And definitely open to that God and that man that called me out. I mean, God, Lord,
your
y'all.
Sister.
That's what I call her, my big sister. That's what we call her. That's it. Everybody know David. Everybody in my life know David. I mean, you know, they do. They know that the love that we have for each other is, God, let me go. Love y'all. Thanks. I'm going to say.
Hey, I'm Cam. I'm an addict. I'm from Pensacola. I've been clean for 2 years now. Really, I'm like, my feet are clammy, like, doing this, but I just feel like I've been very validated by this meeting, and I kind of did see on the schedule that this meeting was going on, and I didn't give a whole lot of thought to it, but I just think that it's so, because I moved from other places to Alabama in the third grade and went all through high school, and so, like, you know, a place, like, talking about being gay and stuff like that, I just think that's really wild right now, because that normally, that doesn't, you know, that wasn't my experience of, you know, we don't talk about that kind of stuff. I have a lot of experience with getting my ass beat real good Even in my addiction, there's a lot of the men that would say, you know, the loudest people saying "eat shit and die, faggot," would be the ones when behind closed doors and wanting to do stuff and give me the bag of dope and some money, and that's just really crazy to me. And I felt like, you know, even in the rooms, I wanted to not be that person that does stuff with a guy, but they don't want to be, you know, because like even when I first started coming around, you know, I remember somebody from my area up on my phone, you know, sending me pictures saying, you want to hang out? And I at first, you know, I'm like, you know, telling my best friend, I was like, I don't know, like, you know, maybe I should. But then, you know, I don't want to be that person, you know, being used and like that. And then because, you know, people just use you. And I am HIV positive too. And I've been positive for years. I know that people that were struggling with HIV and AIDS back in the day, it was a death sentence. But I just want to say too that inactive addiction and using, it can still be a death sentence, because there were times, a whole lot of times, when I kind of would try to go get treatment for it, and I was just so bad. I've had so many doctors say, you know, we can't give you these meds that cost so much. Like, we know you're not going to stay clean. You're homeless. You're shooting up drugs. To the point where I was seriously flirting with like an actual AIDS diagnosis a few years ago, and it was bad. It scared the shit out of me. I had never had really any consequences from being HIV positive until I just decided to go for years without taking any meds and shooting up using dirty needles. And I know that's a whole lot of details about the addiction, but like that's how germs, I guess, get into your body, and how you can quickly kind of get a whole lot of infections, and then, you know, an infection can turn into AIDS. And I remember it was real bad, and I finally started getting treatment when I moved to Pensacola. I was living in Illinois, and I moved to Pensacola, and now I'm undetectable. I have a really healthy, and I know this isn't like a gay meeting, and I've always felt like since I came into the fellowship that, you know, I'm an addict first, because it doesn't matter, you know, what you're pretty much about to get clean. But, you know, I do feel very, very validated. My whole life I've been invalidated for that, and so I'm very grateful today. I mean, I think it's so wild that like we're even talking about this right now. I've heard since, you know, my 2 years being here that, you know, people am briefly telling their stories, and you know, and then I came out as gay or whatever, or I did some, but like never like actually like talking about it. So I just think it's so crazy, especially in Alabama, man. Like, yeah. Because, you know, like I said, you know, you just, you know, get your ass beat. Like, that's all it was for so long. So thanks for letting me share.
So I was sitting there and I was thinking while I was here, I'm Shane and I'm an addict. So I was sitting here thinking that the irony in the fact that, you know, I'm straight, right? And I'm a heterosexual guy. And I was like, am I even allowed to speak in here? But in all jokes aside, it's kind of like the irony in that, on the other side of that, is kind of wild that, you know, to sit and think about if you're homosexual in certain arenas, you would be feeling just the way that I was feeling, fixing to get up and share something. So I thought that was pretty cool, just to be able to to be devil's advocate on that side. So Paul is my sponsor, and he's been my sponsor for a long time. And I don't have this really cool story where I was like this gay person, a hater, basher person. That doesn't look like that. Now I love gay people. That's not what's going on. But what I will say is, and I make this joke all the time, I run in the ground, but, you know, I've never hated gay people. It's bisexual people that I hate. Because y'all are just greedy. y'all want everything. You can't have it all, bro. So, but on a serious note, so being on the other side of that, I also want to encourage or at least share my experience with having a gay sponsor as a heterosexual male. The first time we worked a step together, we're in this apartment, very clean apartment. Right? I mean, very, very clean. Yeah. So I go in and we're sitting down, and this is I've worked some steps before, but very briefly with a sponsor some years before this. And we sit down and he's like, so what we're going to do first is we're going to start with a breathing meditational exercise. And I'm like, the fuck is a breathing meditation exercise? He's like, I want you to sit on my couch and I want you to close your eyes. And now I'm thinking, oh, here it comes. This is what this shit's really all about right here. So either I'm getting a roofie in just a minute, something's fixing to fucking happen in this bitch, right? And so not the experience that I had at all. Working with him has taught me so many different principles in life on how to be a man. The masculinity thing that I grew up and I adopted those beliefs were not what made a man a man. And that was just being ill-advised. But working with Paul and with a God of understanding and working some steps, I can't express the gratitude of the experience and the perspective that I got from him. I've had other sponsors, and I've had really good sponsors, and they all brought something different to the table. But I think that the biggest thing, if I ever had to say, that I got from Paul was love and probably the closest reflection of the way my higher power can love me unconditionally. And that's what I got from him. And I want to thank you. And we've since reunited, being Ms. Sponsee again. And I just don't want anybody to detour because, you know, somebody may think, oh, I don't want to get a gay sponsor. Everybody's going to think I'm gay, and that's why I got a gay sponsor. Because that went through my head too, right? And in fear of being judged or in fear of people judging my sexuality, I, you know, was hesitant about that. And just to be honest with you, I'm so happy that I made that decision. Thank you for letting me share.
Hi, I'm Tiffany, and I'm an L. Wow. So I'm sitting there, and my friend goes, go share. And I'm like, I was already thinking about it. I'm not a sharer, but I don't know. I just had a feeling, a calling to come up here. And so my story's a little off, I guess. I don't know. I came up and was really scared about how I viewed women. They intimidated me. I wasn't sure why. I was scared to talk to them. And it was more because I was kind of attracted to them and didn't realize it. I came up in a town where, you know, I didn't have any gay people, any lesbians, anything. So I didn't even really know it was a thing, I guess, if that's even the thing. I'm getting on my toes and I'm already nervous and will pass out. So, you know, so I'm very hot. I'm going to take my clothes off. So, like, when, you know, in high school, I'm in the gym, you know, having to change clothes in front of people, you know, it made me really nervous, and I just never really understood it. And, you know, I did the thing, I did the men, you know, I never understood why it wasn't, like, this best thing ever that people say that it's supposed to be. So as I started to use, I became, you know, more introduced to different sides of the world, and I met a lady, and you know, she was out, she was a lesbian, and so we got involved. And for the longest time, I thought it was just my disease that I was acting out, that my using, you know, made me go this way, you know. So when I got clean, of course, when we get clean, we bring those crazy behaviors with us, you know, the first few months until we start really working on ourselves. And I was in a halfway house, and I started, you know, seeing the girl that I roommated with. And then I met this guy, and, you know, doing what I do, I ended up getting pregnant. And so I was going to have a child. And as I was working through my steps, I was like, okay, so this is what's happened. I am acting out of my old behaviors with this woman, and this is not who I'm supposed to be. I'm fixing to have a child. I'm going to have to straighten my life up, you know, go the straight way. That's what I needed to do, was take the straight path, because I'm fixing to have a kid. And this is ingrained in me, didn't know that it was okay. And so that's what I did. You know, I started working on some steps, and I had my child, and then I met this man, and he was amazing. He was understanding. He loved my kid. He adopted my kid, like literally adopted my child, and made the child his own. And as I was riding through steps, I really became honest and truthful to myself of who I was. And it was really, really hard to go to this person and say, this is who I am, and I'm sorry that, you know, we were together for like 2 years, and you've gone and adopted my child, and I can't be with you because I'm not attractive and attracted to you. And I was at a verge of, I just had surgery because I was in a car accident. It was either come clean and be truthful of who I was, or I was on the verge of using, because I was so unhappy. I was depressed, couldn't go nowhere, you know, I couldn't drive. But anyway, so I was like, I had to make a choice. And it was really hard, and it was really difficult. And, you know, he was in the rooms too, and we had a lot of the same friends. And I was so scared that, you know, everybody was going to leave me. You know, not only am I divorcing someone, but like our friends are just going to abandon me. And yes, there were a few that, you know, chose sides, of course. But the ones that really, really loved me stood by my side and loved me through it. And I was like a newcomer again after, you know, the divorce and, you know, coming out. It was like, okay, now I'm free and I can do what I wanted to do. So of course, with 5 years clean, I'm acting a fool. But I was able to, you know, do that a little bit, lived a little dirty, but still, you know, come back and get, I know it's terrible. I know, but I did. I lived dirty at 5 years clean. Okay. And I saw it, and I was like, okay, no, I can't do this, you know, and I've really got to focus on me and get back to what I need to do for myself, which is Narcotics Anonymous, and pretty much start over, you know. And I did, worked some steps, got to really get honest, got honest with my family, which I thought was going to like disown me, and they were so loving and so accepting. It was just, I just never thought that that was going to be possible. And now I'm happily in a relationship for 10 years. So, and I'm But anyways, but I wouldn't be here today or be able to be truthful and be honest with myself or with anybody if it wasn't for Narcotics Anonymous and the 12 steps. That's given me the freedom to be who I am and to love myself and let everybody love me as who I am and not who I think you need me to be. So that's all I got.
My name's David Nemanani. It was a great meeting. Thank y'all for coming. We're going to close with the third step prayer.